This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.
This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Info, and today I'm joined by two representatives from our state legislature, Senator Barry Crago.
Good morning, Kate.
Nice to see you, Barry, and also House District Representative Marilyn Connolly. Nice
good
to
morning.
See you. Good morning, and thank you for taking a moment. Both of you are actually rookie at your new jobs. Barry, you've been in, you were formerly a House representative, and Marilyn, you slid into Barry's seat, and Barry went on up to the Senate to represent Senate District 22, of which Johnson County is a significant part. And the session has finished. It was an unusual session, I think, fair to say, and certainly characterised by a tremendous number of bills. And for the first time, the House saw a majority of Freedom Caucus, self-declared Freedom Caucus representatives, which many people would now regard as having had significant influence on the kind of legislation that came out and also the way that it was conducted. How was your experience, Barry? You were new to the Senate, but you're familiar with Cheyenne and its dealings. How was this session?
So it was obviously as you mentioned, it was my first year in the Senate, which is different. I mean, you know, on the surface, I think a lot of people would say it's House and the Senate look alike. They operate fairly similarly. But the truth is, it's very different. The debate's different. The debate style's different. And so just getting in the groove and learning how to be a senator versus a representative.
So how is it different? Could you sort of flesh that out a bit?
Yeah, happy to do that. So, for example, on the House side, you have four microphones, and they're at a podium. And to speak, you have to leave your desk, and you go stand in line and wait at a podium. And in the Senate, you have to speak from your desk. You're not allowed to speak unless you're at your desk and you have a microphone at your desk. And that it seems small. It's not. It's a big deal, and it changes the debate style, and it takes it from more of a group debate style in the House, which is intended to be, to an individual debate style in the Senate, because you're on your own. For example, when you're in the House and you're standing at the microphone waiting to speak, you're talking to your colleagues and you're saying, "Hey, what are you going to say? And what do you think of this?" And you're bouncing ideas back and forth literally the seconds before you go to the mic. You don't do that in the Senate. You're not talking to anybody. It's all you and whatever you think to say at that moment in time. And so it creates a different debate style, and if you watch it, it's more methodical, I would say, and less emotional, which is, it's good and bad, right? It's a balance, and I think whoever invented this system is, you know, absolute genius, because it's intended to do what it does what it's intended to do, which, you know, that the House is the people's House, right? It's you're the representatives closest to the people, and so there's just a lot of, you know, a lot more that goes into that that people don't understand. So just trying to get my feet under me, learn how to do that. I think by the end of the session, I was getting more in tune with that.
Marilyn, your first experience of actually being in the House as a former commissioner, and I know you've been to Cheyenne when session has been in progress many times, but how was it for you?
It wasn't quite what I had expected. I thought it'd be more like when I'd been down there and testified and done things in the past. We had so many more bills in front of us. It was extremely fast moving. And I will say, building on what Senator Crago just said, emotional wise, it seemed like I was surprised at the emotions that flowed around the House. There were people crying almost every day.
Barry, just turning to you for a moment, when you were in the House, was that typical, or are we seeing something new in the way that legislation is happening?
I don't think that's new. I mean, I think that was the way it was. It's always sort of been that way in the House. I think this year, based on, you know, visiting with Representative Connolly and some of the other folks, I think it was exacerbated a little bit this time around, but it's not uncommon. I experienced the same sense of emotions. I wanted to cry sometimes myself.
I didn't cry, but I put my head in my hands a couple of times, but no. So it was very enlightening for me and humbling, because you're in that chamber and you know of all the people that have been there before you and the things that they worked so hard on and brought the state of Wyoming to where it is today. The ideas, the funding ideas, when we were talking about budgets and different funds, I'm like, these folks had the forethought to think about the future. They weren't necessarily putting statutes in place for them right then. They were looking at what's going to be good for the kids in the future. And I think we needed to be better at that rather than
So you say some of that got lost.
I think
maybe
so.
In this session.
I felt like it did. But overall, I learned that you just have to stay focused and be ready to act at a moment, because when they start bringing those amendments in, and they're just, things are flying on that floor. And so that was an eye-opener for me.
So it was ticking along with business as usual, just a great deal of business, and as you say, maybe some high emotion and a lot of amendments and discourse, and that made it a more brisk and complicated mm-hmm. session in some ways. But then almost just before the end of the session, there was an upset. The Senate rejected the supplemental budget, which had been in motion, and I believe that the House especially had been working on the basis that that supplemental budget would be largely intact. But the Senate rejected the notion of a supplemental budget overall, which is unprecedented. Barry, can you explain from where you were why you think that happened and maybe some of the consequences of that?
Sure. And to be honest, I'm not exactly sure, you know, why that happened. That was a decision made by Senate leadership. And I've said before, it's probably not exactly what I would have done. But I also, you know, I'll defend them, support their decision, right? That's part of having leadership. You stand up for them. And so even though it's not what I would have done, you know, I support that. Because I think what they were thinking was, we need to save some money. And I think part of that was just looking ahead to next year's budget, right? And so we have oil prices going down. We have stock market going down, both of which drastically affect the state's budget.
What? Why?
And so for oil, for example, we have severance tax, right? That funds a lot of state government. We also have ad valorem on that oil, which helps our county government, schools, etc. And so And then on the stock market, the state has a lot of money invested through
and
securities.
And it has done very well. Our investments have been extremely lucrative, very shrewd investing, but it is still subject to fluctuation in the overall market.
Our investment income pays for 30% of state government operations, large percentage, right? And so it does have a huge impact on our budget. Well, if our securities, our investments are going down, so is our state revenue. And so I think looking ahead, and probably wisely, they thought maybe we should try to save some money. And then
that was very late in the day, though.
It was. Mm-hmm. It was very late in the day. But I think a lot of those things were coming into focus as the session went on, right? So this didn't all happen right, you know, in a vacuum, so to speak. It's over time. And then the other thing is some of the big ticket items that were in the supplemental budget were being addressed elsewhere anyways. For example, I had a bill to deal with the fire suppression and relief and restoration monies. There was another way that we were dealing with external cost adjustments for teachers and education, which was another big ticket item. And so just some of those things were being handled outside the budget through other bills anyways. And so I think there was an avenue there where we weren't going to, give up our opportunities to actually fund the emergencies that had arisen since last year's main budget.
So what was the response in the House, Marilyn? I mean, an overall theme of this session was more fiscal responsibility, tightening but expenditures, prudent expenditures, fiscal responsibility. Mm-hmm. So that general thrust must have been supported in some way by the House, but there were still a number of things that were left just in flux.
Yes, so it did. The message did come down, was it on a Thursday evening or something like after 6 o'clock or something like that. But I think our leadership, the House Speaker and the Majority Leader, those guys had been, they're working back and forth with the Senate all the time. And it, for a new person, it seemed, it was sort of seamless. This stuff was moving along, and they'd come back and things might change as to what bills might be able to come up to be discussed in the next general file session, Committee of the Whole. And when the word came down that that next morning, the House was in, I would say, some pretty big chaos, because it's like, oh boy, now what? Because we had gone through the budget bill, just like they have, the Senate has theirs, and there were things that were amended, things that were approved and passed in that budget bill. Well, then that took those bills and basically killed them as well. So there was a big rush at the end to see what kind of things they could salvage. For example, I'll just use the Veterans Home.
Yes, there were two items that were particularly in the supplemental budget that were relevant to Johnson County. The Casey School boiler, mm-hmm. with a $4 million price tag, because if the boiler isn't properly repaired and in full working order, the school can't open because of regulation. And the second thing was the improvements at the Veterans Home.
Right. And so on that bill, since it was in the state capital construction bill that didn't pass, and I think that was a joint conference committee where that ended up probably being gone. But what people were doing then is they were taking, I'll just use that for an example, they were taking their like child development centers, those kind of health bills, those then automatically were just gone. The state penitentiary bill to fund the safety locks and different things in the penitentiary, that was gone after the Senate. And so, and the state shooting complex, that was another big one. But so what happened was people started rushing around to figure out how they could find a bill that was still alive
to slide their issue
to
into.
Put the appropriation mm-hmm. into that bill. Then there had to be a rules committee, and then they went all through that. Is this germane? Does it fit into the bill or doesn't it? There's constitutional wording that talks about a single file, a single subject bill, and can you put another bill inside that or not? And is it germane? And so it was just chaos. And then, so they got their, they were amending these other bills to try to add the appropriation. And then we might have two or three amendments. So one day they came with an amendment, and it didn't fly because people voted, well, it's not probably constitutional. It doesn't fit with the title of this bill. So then they come back the next day, because we only had that one other day, and tried to amend it again with a little bit of different verbiage so that it might be acceptable to the majority at that time. And it was really hard to vote on those bills because part of you know that it's not constitutional. But they were putting them in a bill that you were really wanted to see continue and pass. So then you had to think, would, do you vote no because it probably historically wouldn't be acceptable, but now with the situation that they were in, it is. So that's what was happening on the House side, trying to get caught up and find those bills that you could drop another appropriation into. So I looked and I talked to different folks. I was like, is there any bill here that this Veterans Home project would be germane enough and be able to fit into the subject of the bill that it would in?
So the Veterans Home failed to get funded, but it will come back as an issue because the work needs to be done, the funding needs to be found.
So I did talk to a couple of the senators that were on that joint conference committee that bill was going to come up in, that they killed it there. And they said it would, but they were going to wait to see how the federal funding shook out to actually build it. So it'll come back up.
An issue which has come back time and time and time again, and Barry, you're very familiar with this, is property tax reform. And voters, the electorate, constituents were extremely anxious to see some meaningful tax reform. There were a wide number of bills that were discussed in both houses, and we've ended up with a 25% reduction in residential property tax with no backfill. Maybe you could just describe a little bit about whether you think we landed in the right place with that, and what the impact is likely to be in Johnson County, and where we stand as a one county in the state of Wyoming. How we stand to benefit or to suffer from that decision.
So ultimately we ended up at the 25% tax exemption for all residential property. And then beginning next year, it'll be owner-occupied residential property. I had a hard time with this because it has no sunset date, which means we won't go back and look at it. It'll be really hard to go back and.
What is there a mechanism that it could be called back up as something to review if there's no sunset?
Well, any person or committee could bring any legislator could bring a bill. It's just those are really hard to get across the finish line, and so I don't know if that's the right number. I'm glad we were able to do something for the people of our district. Obviously, we both represent Johnson and Sheridan County, and those are two of the county. They're in the top five, right?
We've seen property prices explode,
so,
which has an effect on property tax.
That's right. Yep, has an effect on property tax, which, reminding everybody, is local. That's not state funding, right? Mm-hmm. That all stays here. It either goes to our schools, our counties, or our special districts. And so, I actually voted, when it left the Senate originally, it was a 50% no backfill, but it was a two-year mm-hmm. exemption. Which I also thought was a good bill because it would require us to come back and look at that in 2 years. This one does not. Unfortunately, we didn't actually pass the one bill, which I thought we needed to, which was the fourth class of property, right? So we had a constitutional amendment, which passed overwhelmingly, very high numbers, and we didn't actually pass a bill. I was one of the sponsors on that bill. I thought we needed to get that across the finish line. And when it let, the Senate just said, we're keeping the assessment rate the same, passed it out, but we're creating this fourth class of residential.
So can you explain why having a separated residential class is a benefit?
Because it gives the legislature more tools. We talked about, I think you and I maybe talked about this last year on one of your episodes, is just, it gives the legislature the ability to manage, to lower residential
Absolutely.
Property taxes
yes.
mm-hmm. without creating an exemption. Because I think long term, the exemptions may cause us issues. The most constitutional way to lower property taxes is by lowering the rate. And so that is where I wanted us to go. And even, in reviewing it with the 25%, the Senate said, look, let's just keep the rate the same. Let's do an exemption for now, and then we can come back next year and look at this again, or in 2 years or whatever. But when it went to the House put all sorts of weird stuff on the bill. And so when it came back to the Senate, it was a mess, and it ended up dying because of that mess. And rather than just keeping it clean. And so I think, to be honest, I think that was one of our failures this year. I think we should have passed that. Because I think it was important. We'll see what happens because the people told us to, right? Mm-hmm. people told us to do that, and we didn't do it. And so hopefully next year we can fix that. If it's not a committee bill, I'm sure a couple of us will be bringing personal bills to tackle that again.
So, Marin, how was it in the House? And, you know, you have a position as a former commissioner, so that is what, you know, commissioners' budget that funds all, many of our services, our special use districts and, you know, various other county services are funded in part by the revenue generated from the residential property tax. How was it in the House, and what were you concerned about as the impact for Johnson County?
That was the took hours of debate in the House. We looked at, well, how do you help all the counties in the state, all the districts? We were concerned about places like Weston County, Washakie, you know, because when you're down there, you got to look out for your local entities. But everybody's a little bit different. So when you do one thing here, it affects Washakie County that wouldn't necessarily affect Johnson County. So we tried really hard to try to support those 8 counties that were considered hardship counties, they call them, because of their assessed valuation, but yet try to vote to protect your own district. And that was difficult, but so they had different amendments. When Senator Crago said it came over to the Senate side all fouled up, in my opinion, it was, because they were trying to do so many different things with that. And the bill that I really wanted, I'm glad this one went from 25 to 25% bill for folks. But it will affect services. There's no way around it.
So what kind of and that has to be a metric in your mind as you're considering these bills, you know, what the impact is going to be on the, mm-hmm. on your constituency. A 50% reduction would have been a big
huge
slice out of Johnson County budget, and it would have affected services that, you know, not it funds our schools, but it also healthcare, law enforcement, roads,
hospital, all that.
So you felt that we can absorb the 25%.
I was way more acceptable of the 25%, even without the backfill, and I supported that. The other bill, Senate File 153, to codify the constitutional amendment, I felt was so important. And I really wanted to see that bill get passed, because I think that lays the groundwork then to change that tax rate. And that would affect all residential properties. And going into the future, there wouldn't have been a sunset on that. And I was very disappointed when that fell through the cracks. There again, there was a lot of things in the House that happened that just didn't allow it to be passed. And the other thing we have hanging out there in combination with all these different things is the ballot initiative that people voted on for 50%.
And it's been very confusing to follow, because that also had a 50% reduction tag mm-hmm. attached to it, and it is scheduled to be on the ballot again at the next election. So how will that work with the 25% that's now been passed?
I'm going to pass that over to Senator Crago.
So it's unclear. I think we're going to have to pass some legislation next year to clarify that if it passes, what happens to all of these others? And, you know, I mean, yes, we did do the 25% this year, which applies to everybody. But also remember, last year we passed a 50% long-term homeowners exemption.
I was going to ask you where that slides in, but you also passed your bill, Barry, which has a 4% cap.
Right. So there's a lot of moving parts, right?
Yes.
And so I don't think until, you know, hopefully in the next couple weeks, we'll get some numbers from all of the county assessors on what this starts to look like. the Department of Revenue is right now is working on queries that go into CAMA, into our system, to tell us what the actual fallout is of this. You know, what's the actual amount of taxes saved by our residents, but also the amount of lost revenue to all of the entities, which, you know, as Representative Connolly said, we're both glad to support the 25% for our residents. The question is, what does that look like long term, and how do all these other tax bills play into it? Because it's more than just the 25%. It's 50% for long term homeowners, which already were twice as many as we thought there were going to be. In the time period for filing for isn't even until the last.
Well,
until
the end County of May. Is skewed older as a county in a state which itself is skewed older nationally. Marilyn, what are you saying? But special use districts and other county entities are in budget mode at the moment. They're preparing their budgets for their next year. They're looking at their expenditures. They're trying to plan. What metric are you advising them to look at? Is it as simple as taking 25% of your budget and just trying to make ends meet with 25% less?
It's pretty a broad overview of what could happen. And visiting with our assessor, just a really broad brush, just a quick metric for people, districts to follow. We were looking at $38,000 per mill that they would not be able to budget.
So if you took, if your budget was one mill, you would have $38,000 less.
Yes.
Twice that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But with the caveat that that's very preliminary, and there's a lot of different things to play into that to come up with an actual number, but we felt like they needed to have something to go on, because like you said, they're starting into their budgets and they need to know what they can. And I was really nervous about the special districts, whether it be the cemetery district, fire, rural health, weed and pest, any of those. But they should probably expect a little bit of, not that the fire department's not going to show up on your fire, but they may not be able to sustain what they've been budgeting for. And there's a question about should districts and counties, that brought up on the House floor, should they have as many dollars in reserves as they do? Is that fiscally responsible, or is that just taking more taxes than you need to have? But if you don't have those reserves, they're going to have to use, I feel like, probably be dipping into their reserves if we're not careful to try to keep their services
going. So what is the metric that would be considered to be an appropriate number of reserve? What percentage of, let's say, operating costs or annual budget and so on is a prudent reserve to have, because there are unexpected and emergency issues that come up at any one time. And last year we had the house draw fire, which was a significant expenditure for our county, and we don't know that we're not going to have something again like that or any other unforeseeable event.
And like with, I don't think people realize that you need to have some money in reserve to replace equipment. Fire equipment, EMS equipment is very, very expensive. Hospital is a little different thing than we are, but you take the cemetery district looking at redoing the water system and doing some major upgrades. They need that money in reserve to be able to meet those needs. And you don't know when you might have an ambulance that is on, for whatever reason, is no longer in service, and you've got to be able to have some way to fund another ambulance. And so I don't think they realize that in these reserve accounts, whether it's a county or city, or there's things that are allocated in there, so it looks like there's all this money sitting out there, but really it's already allocated towards something. It's not just money laying around.
So turning away from property tax, it will be an issue which comes back, I assume, and we will watch this carefully. But looking at, there was a plethora of very many different bills across a large number of different sub-segments and category areas. There was a huge amount of legislation coming forward about education and school choice, for example. There was a lot of what I would describe as social policy legislation. There was a lot of emphasis on election reform. There was gun-free zones in schools, and Second Amendment rights were an issue. Maybe you could just share a little bit about how you approached those issues and whether you feel that we landed in the right sort of place, especially bearing in mind Johnson County on some of those things.
Well, from the House side, it took a lot of thought, I think, on some of those issues, because I found myself wanting to support a lot of them, but when it came down to the actual implementation of the bill, it seemed like it just wasn't very workable, and it seemed like we had I can't remember what bill it was, but it had two pages of findings in it before the actual statute got to that. And my thought was, do we need to have all of that in the statute books? They refer to them as the green books. It seemed to me that some of those things just didn't need to be there, maybe in a resolution or something. So I thought about that a lot when we were going through some of these bills, but mostly implementation, because it's probably good for us to do, but when it came right down to making it work, say at the schools or with the privacy areas for women and those sort of things, making that work and being feasible for the schools to do, I felt was going to be very, very difficult, even though we all probably agree that some of this needs to happen. But that's where I fought my head.
So where do you feel, we're talking about really essentially a very conservative Republican dynamic here in Wyoming. Where do you feel that it's appropriate that government begins and ends? You know, what is government overreach and where is it interfering with personal freedoms? How do you assess those things when you're considering individual bills? Because there were a lot of things that, you know, danced along that edge, some people felt.
Well, my brain just goes to how do you legislate righteousness and how do you legislate personal feelings and opinions and lifestyles, and I wish we didn't have to deal with them at all. I think we should stay out of people's bedrooms and lifestyles as best we can. So I was trying to balance too much encroachment on maybe not enough, and try to represent people in the district as best I could with those votes, but those were difficult votes.
And I think you referred specifically to abortion as being one of those issues that, you know, was difficult to consider in light of those various opinions.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Barry?
So, back to the beginning of your question.
Yeah.
Overall, and I think the representative would agree with this, that it just feels like there's a general attack on education.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get that sense. No one's coming right out and saying it, but just go look at the bills and how many of them we voted on. And
when you say an attack on education,
do you mean public education.
The public system.
Yeah, which is the foundation of our country,
mm-hmm.
right? It's what makes us what we are. And so I think we have to do a better job of defending that. I can say based on our votes, I think we tried, but some of those bills still make it out, you know, mm-hmm. but there was a lot of those bills that are, you know, going after public education and not just the funding side of it, although that's a big portion of it. And none of us are here to say that we can't do better in education funding. That's not what anybody wants to say. We can always find ways to do a better job, and we're going to have to, because I think, you know, you and I have talked, the demographics of Wyoming are changing, right? We have less students, but we still have the same facilities we have to maintain. And, you know, we have an aging population, and so we have less people working and contributing to, you know, the income and revenue of our cities and our counties and our states and our schools, et cetera. And so as things change, so do we. We have to. And so there's no one saying that we can't do that. But it's hard for me sometimes when I'm sitting down there listening to these arguments to get my head wrapped around what we're talking about, mm-hmm. because we come from a place that has good schools, right? We both represent two counties that have really good schools, whether it's Johnson County 1 or the three districts in Sheridan County. We are really lucky. We are blessed with good schools. The hard part is there are parts of the state that maybe don't have what we have. And so, you know, when the representative's talking about balancing our interests against some of our colleagues' interests who come from districts that maybe aren't as blessed as we are, you have to consider those arguments and figure out, you know, what's the best thing to do and how should we vote on these particular issues. But I just, you know, just you get a general sense when you start looking at some of these things that folks are trying to put upon our teachers. I mean, there was a bill that says you have to put your lesson plan for the entire year up before school starts. Well, that's not possible. Their lesson plan is going to change, right? Things don't go according to plan. It doesn't matter what your job is or what your occupation is. Your plan's going to change from day to day. Mm-hmm. You can give us a general idea of what you're going to teach our kids. That's great. They already do that. You can look up the syllabus. But the actual lesson plan of day to day, that's just adding too much stress to our teachers that they don't need. They already have a hard enough job. And so just things like that, you know, that we're trying to fight against.
Well, there was another bill that caused a lot of social media comment here in Johnson County about it, which was a proposal to relax the required certifications of teachers, and that basically if you were 18 and it was approved by over 18 and clean record, you know, you could then go into a classroom. And it wasn't quite as blunt as that, but that really, I think, led a lot of teachers to feel that they're qualifications were not worth anything and that they were not being respected properly. It did die as a bill. It didn't get very far at all. But is that the sort of thing that you're also referring to?
It is. Yeah. And then obviously there were lots of bills related to education funding. And
so that's a big question. A lot of people say that education has too much money. There is too much money in education. The price tag is too great. We're not seeing the right kind of results. We're not seeing the right kind of graduation rates, etc. What's your opinion on those things?
Well, I'll go back to what I said a minute ago. Is there ways we can be better about how we spend our money? Absolutely. I'm not sure people are going to like that, right? Because there are things that we use in education funding that maybe aren't wholly related to education, whether it be athletics or club events, etc., things like that. But you go up to a school, there's not, and start wandering around, and I have kids, you have kids, right? We're still in that, you know, we have high schoolers. All I see is teachers working really hard to make our kids as educated as possible. I don't see waste. And if you go sit down with the superintendent or the school board, they're going to tell you the same thing. They would cut it if they could. There's just not, there's the way we have set up our education system, there isn't a whole lot of fluff. And so for folks who don't have kids in school, it's easy to say, let's cut education. It's harder for those of us who've been following our kids through the system. And so I don't know. I don't know the answer. Do I know we're going to have to make changes because we can't continue to afford the way we're doing it now? Yes, I'm not denying that. I totally agree. I just don't know where that's going to come and how we're going to do it, which is why we have recalibration coming up this year. And they're going to dig into this, right? That's going to be their job to figure out what education funding looks like going forward. Obviously, one of the biggest expenses we have is facilities. And that's a big portion of the school funding model is facilities. I think we have to do a better job, figure out a better way to fund the major maintenance, to fund, you know, fund our long-term maintenance. Our buildings have to last longer than they do, right? Everybody agrees on that. How we make that happen, I'm not sure. It probably means doling out more money from the state year to year rather than all at once, right? And so
there is an additional pressure on that too, of course, which is the final result of the lawsuit, it is as it's called, that the Wyoming Education Association brought, And there were five findings from that, and the judge said one of the things that in the overall petition was that Wyoming State had not been funding Wyoming education to an adequate level, and one of the five areas was in facilities and maintenance, and so that is now under another eye.
Right. I mean, a good example is our KC school, right? Yep. I mean, we've been without an HVAC system, a proper one, for 2 years now. And if we finally got the funding this session, it shouldn't take 2 years. That the second it goes out, that money should be available. And it's not. And that's a flaw in the system, right? And that's something that we can work on, that we have to be better about.
Yes, and to add on to what Senator Cragle just said, our school district is really good about, they've got maintenance plans. They spend hours looking at how, what, because they have to have plans in place, and so they just need to be able to fund those sort of things a lot faster than they're doing right now. And teachers shouldn't have to, I don't think, be buying their own supplies for the classroom. And a lot of teachers are dedicated enough in our districts that they do supply things out of their own pockets because they care. And that's hard when you're sitting in the house and you're listening to things of why our education system's not as good as it could be, when you know there's teachers sitting there dedicating extra hours and everything else to try to make it good. But I think one of the things education-wise, too, was the career and technical piece that was around. I thought that was good to be able to get that going. And the other one that makes me nervous is the funding for special needs, that the schools, they really need that funding, and I'm not sure how that's all going to play out.
Well, that brings us to another question I wanted to introduce to you both, which is that we are not working in an isolated vacuum as one state. We are part of a federation, and there is a lot happening at a national level. We're at the beginning of President Trump's second term, and there's been a lot of action, a lot of change to what was considered to be the normal. You didn't have much time when you were down in Cheyenne to sort of lift your head and probably see what was going on there, but there are significant things, and DOGE, for example, is affecting many people here in Wyoming, and there may be other national decisions that are happening, policy decisions that are happening, that will influence and impact our state. What are you particularly concerned about or keeping an eye on?
Well, back to something I said before, I think one of the things that is going to affect us is, in particular, the administration's policies, you know, regarding natural resources, minerals, will likely drive the price of oil, gas, etc. down, at least in the short term. And that will have a major effect on budgets, right? Revenues for, like I said, the state, counties.
So should we anticipate a downturn and a lean, tougher economic times?
I am expecting that. Now,
I am too.
Hopefully I'm wrong, but that's, you know, it will be good for the individual's pocketbooks. You, I, the representative, if gas prices go down, that's good for all of us. But that doesn't...
Because we're paying less in our monthly bill.
That's right. Yep. But that doesn't mean that's going to help out the state. And so we obviously feel good for ourselves, but when we have to go down and start balancing the state budget next year during the budget session, that will be more difficult.
Tourism is a huge part of our economic system. Will the parks be open? Do we know that? Do we know how many people are going to be employed? Are people losing their jobs? What do we know about that? And how much, you know, what influence do you have as state representatives on that?
Well, I'm on the Travel, Tourism, Recreation, Wildlife Board, and I'm sure that's going to be an issue. I don't know yet for sure what our interim committee meetings are going to be about yet. That hasn't been finalized, but I'm sure that's going to be something that we have to think about, because tourism now is like the second largest generator of funds for the state. Ag kind of falls under that now. But yeah, I can see where
And tariffs, will tariffs, are we subject to fluctuations with tariffs? Is that something that's going to impact our Wyoming economy much?
Absolutely.
I think so, yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, some of them might be positive, some of them might be negative, and I don't know how that's all going to shake out. I don't think anybody does for sure. I mean, there's some of those that will help our ag industry, for example, but all of the tariffs regarding metals, et cetera, are probably going to hurt our oil and gas industry that rely on a lot of foreign inventory for some of that stuff. So it's just, we're probably in the wait and see game. I don't think we know an answer today. No one does, but, you know, a year from now or 6 months from now, I think we'll have a better idea about how some of this stuff is starting to shake out.
Well, thank you very much for, I mean, we haven't touched on everything. I don't think we possibly could. There was so much going on. Thank you very much for sort of explaining some of what it was like and some of the decisions that were made, and also the reasons that you voted in many ways for various different issues. And I appreciate your time, and I hope that we can get together again.
I would like that. I think one thing I might add is that the people in District 40, Johnson County, are very resilient, independent, hard-working people, and no matter what happens with all this budgeting and on the national level and so on, we'll figure out a way to make things work. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us today. It was a pleasure.
This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.